This is a production of Cornell University.
Please rise and join us in the singing of the national anthem.
Good afternoon, Chairman Meinig, members of the Board of Trustees, President Skorton, Mr. Plouffe, faculty and staff, family and friends, and of course, members of the class of 2009. My name is CJ Slicklin, and it is an honor and a privilege to be amongst the first to welcome you to the 2009 senior class convocation and the 141st commencement weekend at Cornell University. Class of 2009, we have come a long way since our first days in Ithaca. This weekend is a time for us to celebrate our accomplishments with our family, our friends, and those who made this moment possible. Our final days at Cornell are very much like the first ones, confusing, overwhelming, and filled with uncertainty as to what is to come. But we should take comfort in knowing that just as during orientation, we, as a class, are all having the same feelings. We've been prepared well for the challenges that lie ahead, and we've fostered friendships with people that will last for a lifetime. In his address to the incoming class of 1868, Cornell's inaugural president, Andrew Dixon White, challenged new Cornellians to make the most of their time here. "You are not here to be made," he said. "You are here to make yourselves." Fellow members of the class of 2009, we have worked hard to become the people we are today. In our time here, we have grown as students, as public servants, and as individuals. We were intimidated by the challenges that we faced upon our arrival. Almost immediately, we were given a list of 161 things to do before we graduated. Unfortunately, I only completed 117. Forced to take on the new Cornell lingo, we learned words like prelim, Cornell card, and hotelli. We tried to follow along when people threw around acronyms such as ILR, RPU, or TCAT. We learned the history of Cornell and still marvel at how someone was able to get a pumpkin on top of that clock tower. We quickly learned that Journey, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Bon Jovi are out of the budget for Slope Day. That big red bucks don't carry over from year to year, and when in doubt, it's probably best to detag that picture on Facebook. But our experiences, however varied and obscure, will get us through these uncertain times ahead. For many of us, Hurricane Katrina struck during our freshman year. Organizations such as the Big Red Relief were created, and many did what they could to support those in the affected areas. In 2007, we received a well-deserved day off. 30 inches of snow fell on Valentine's Day, and Cornell closed for the first time in 8 years. Cornell Dining later reported record losses of dining hall trays for sledding on Live Slope. In just the last year, we've won 8 Ivy League athletic championships. We built robots that we would send into space. We helped host His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres, and the great Stephen Colbert. I firmly believe we are leaving Cornell a better place than we found it. But as we leave Cornell, we now must face the next set of challenges that are coming our way. Regardless of what comes next, even if we don't know yet, we have the incredible advantage of applying the lessons learned here at Cornell to help us succeed in whatever we do. We can rest assured that we have a strong foundation to build upon. Sure, we were knocked down. Yes, a lot of us had to deal with the uncommon feeling of rejection. We sent out more resumes and networked with more alumni. For a large part of our class, our next chapter may not be what we had initially envisioned. But in the end, we will be remembered as the class that demonstrated strong perseverance through very difficult economic times. We will be the group who had to work harder to get what we wanted, and we will be better for it. Remember that an educated Cornellian is not one who merely completes the required credits and passes a swim test. Rather, an educated Cornellian is one who leaves with and applies their very well-rounded education. And whatever we do in life, wherever we go, whomever we meet, let us not forget that we are Cornellians. Congratulations, class of 2009. It's now my pleasure to introduce Ms. Caroline Newton, president of the class of 2009, for the senior class address.
Thank you, CJ. Welcome, everyone. Family, friends, faculty, and of course, graduates. To the class of 2009, I'm not only welcoming you here today, but also welcoming you back from the week-long vacation we just had, senior week. I hope you all had an amazing time going on trips, sleeping in late, and enjoying every moment with your closest friends. But if you ask me, the last 4 years were senior week-esque, minus the work, studying, prelims, and glacial Ithaca winters, of course. But for me, and hopefully for all of you, my entire experience here at Cornell involved being with friends, having fun, learning and growing, and really enjoying the so-called bubble life of college. Lately, I've been asked a lot about my 4 years here at Cornell. Many of the questions have been about the choices I have made. Why did you join class councils? Why did you volunteer to participate in phone-a-thons? And why did you work at Jason's for 3 years? Well, the answer is not that I love making numerous phone calls, and I don't enjoy selling frozen yogurt and beer or restocking shelves. The answer is the people I have met along the way by joining these groups. My fellow employees, group mates, roommates, and classmates, they are the reason for what I have done, and they are the ones that have made Cornell my Cornell. We all have our Cornell. Many of the graduates here today have spent about 4 years here, and considering we are only in our early 20s, that is a significant portion of our lives. But your Cornell might be slightly different than that of the person sitting in front of you. Some of you are part of the Greek system, some were varsity athletes, others dancers or singers or student leaders. Some were all of the above. Maybe you were an Olinite, or maybe you preferred man, or maybe you avoided the libraries altogether. And some of you have never stepped foot in the Ag Quad, while others barely left Ives or the Statler. Clearly, we are all different, and our college experiences are all unique. Cornell, due to its large size, both in its physical landscape and its endless social and academic options, can seem separating at times. But Cornell also has this amazing power to bring us all together. Take, for example, this past presidential election. For many of us, this was our first time to vote. Not only was it a privilege to be part of such a big event, but being here at Cornell made it feel even more sweet. I watched the election results at an event in College Town alongside over 600 of my classmates. And the energy in that room was amazing. regardless of the party people were voting for. There was an overall sense of moving forward, together as a country, but also together here as a community at Cornell. And that is exactly what we are doing here today, moving forward together. Today, it doesn't matter which of Cornell's 7 schools you attended, and it doesn't matter what house you are in or what group you are a member of. We are all members of the class of 2009. I remember when we first joined the class of 2009 and thinking, 2009, wow, that's far away. I can't wait to be a senior. By the time we all graduate, we'll be so much older, smarter, and certainly we'll be more awesome. Well, here we are. It is 2009, and tomorrow we will step into our long black gowns, put on our tasseled caps, and be handed our diplomas. So, are we older, smarter, and more awesome? Older, yes. We definitely did age, and you can tell simply by going through our Facebook albums. Smarter? Well, I hope so. Earlier this week, I was a bit worried about myself. Worried that, although I will receive a degree in meteorology, that I really don't know everything about the weather. What if people ask me weather-related questions and I have no clue? But then I reminded myself of a few things. One, no matter what I say, people will probably never know whether or not I'm right. Two, there is always Google. And three, meteorologists never really trust it anyway. But on a serious note, I assured myself that I have in fact learned a lot. We all have. We have learned tons of valuable information about our majors and other topics. But more importantly, hopefully you have all learned to love to learn. And this was not always easy. Sometimes it seemed easier to just study for tests, and sometimes it seemed like it was all about grades. By putting grades aside, though, you begin to really enjoy what you learn. And the people here at Cornell have such a wealth of information to offer. Not just our professors, but our peers. You all have your own specialties and unique perspectives, and from you, I have learned the most. And finally, are we more awesome than we were as freshmen? I think so. But what has made us so much cooler? I think it was just being here at Cornell, being a member of the class of 2009. Now, we may not realize it now, since we are surrounded by Cornell and Cornellians every day, but this is a really cool place. The Cornell name carries a lot of weight, but not only for being an Ivy League school, but for being very cutting edge, dynamic, and creative. Therefore, everyone who is a Cornellian, especially the class of 2009, is, by default, awesome. So today, I urge you to look in the mirror and tell yourself, you know what, I really am amazing. Because we've all come a long way since our freshman year. And it's our Cornells that have made us the great people that we are today. We have braved the Ithaca winters, trekked to classes, taken endless prelims and finals, and really kept our heads up even if we wanted to give up. In the future, our classes will turn into meetings and prelims will be projects. We will face hard times and difficult decisions, but we will always prosper because we are the class, Cornell class of 2009, and by definition, we are awesome. Thank you and congratulations to all. I would now like to introduce the co-presidents of the class of 2009 Alumni Council, Michael McDermott and Rebecca Robbins.
Thank you, Caroline. During our last months far above Cayuga's waters, we, the class of 2009, have joined a 30-year university tradition. This tradition is a unifying effort for the class to make a lasting impact on campus through the senior class campaign, I Give. On behalf of those who have led this campaign and those who will lead the council as alumni, I want to express how much we have been inspired and motivated by our exceptional class and the entire Cornell community. Rebecca and I are thrilled to be here today to announce nothing short of phenomenal results, thanks to the participation and remarkable generosity of our fellow seniors. I am confident that legacy lies at the heart of the senior class campaign. Each member of the senior class has spent the past few years engrossed in the Cornell community in various ways. Through not only academics, but our daily lives as Cornellians, we have formed incredible memories and have developed as individuals. Without Cornell, we would not be the extraordinary people that we are today. Through the senior class campaign, we, who have benefited so much from Cornell's resources, have had the chance to give back and provide for new students to experience, grow, and prosper. As we all head our separate ways, we should feel proud that we have left behind a substantial scholarship, which will benefit a rising senior each year, thanks to the generosity of Trustee Martin Tang and our classmates. Trustee Tang issued our class a challenge that we have not only met, but surpassed. Thanks to his support, we have leveraged 36,655 challenge dollars for the class of 2009. For the class of 2009 Stephen H. Weiss Memorial Scholarship. This scholarship honors former chairman of the board, Stephen Weiss, who was an exemplary philanthropist and devoted Cornellian. Weiss's legacy has inspired our class this year, and now we are leaving our own legacy at Cornell. This campaign and the endowed scholarship are important because they give seniors a tangible way to say thank you to the Cornell community. It is our hope that this campaign has given seniors a greater sense of ownership and pride in regards to Cornell, because we truly have made a strong and lasting impact.
I'm so proud to be a member of the fantastic class of 2009. We've shared a wonderful experience here in Ithaca, but Cornell will continue to impact our lives wherever and forever. We can in turn have an impact on the future of Cornell. Think about the passions you've developed here. Stay in contact with your professors, advisors, and coaches. Stay informed by reading the Cornell Alumni Magazine and the Cornell Chronicle. And stay in contact with President Skorton, who I know would love to receive an email from each of you every Sunday night. There's no need to lose the connection simply because we're leaving the Hill. For commencement means to begin. And guess what? We have many Cornell memories yet to form. From reunions to regional class events, we'll have the opportunity to maintain old friendships and forge new ones. As your class officers, we'll see to it that the class of 2009 will never be far from each other or from Cornell. As Mike mentioned earlier, we are thrilled to report that the campaign results are nothing short of outstanding. The class of 2009 has broken records across many categories, thanks to the enthusiasm, dedication, and generosity of our fellow seniors to the future of Cornell. We will go down in history as one of the highest participating classes on record. We had a goal-breaking 54.52% participation. We had tremendous success with our leadership gifts, which were recognized by membership in our giving societies. We blew away the record for the number of Greek chapters and athletic teams who had 100% of their seniors participate in the campaign. Finally, and not without bias, I thank my fellow hotelies for having the highest participation rate among all the undergraduate colleges. Yeah. With 65% of seniors participating in the campaign. We would now like to ask invite President Skorton to join me and Mike at the podium. Thanks to the 1,772 participating seniors, on behalf of the class of 2009, it is our honor to present this check for $85,000 to Cornell University. Congratulations, seniors. please join us in welcoming the members of the Cornell Glee Club and Chorus as they perform Beati Coron Via by Charles Villiers Sanford.
Hey, 09. Hey, 09. Big weekend that we've been waiting 4 years for. What a beautiful day, what a beautiful event, and what a beautiful musical interlude. My thanks to your class for your enthusiasm, for your generosity, and for making Cornell what it is. The class of 2009 sought for its convocation speaker someone who has had a profound impact on our society. And in that category, David Plouffe has few rivals. As chief campaign manager for Barack Obama. He directed strategy that defeated formidable primary opponents and culminated in the president's historic victory and the beginning of a remarkable shift in federal policies. David Plouffe studied political science at the University of Delaware, and while still an undergraduate, he joined the 1990 re-election campaign of Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. His political talent and quiet tenacity earned immediate respect, and he never returned to finish his degree. Instead, he was soon running election campaigns for governors, senators, and representatives. He also served in 1997 and 1998 as Democratic leader Dick Gephardt's deputy chief of staff. In 1999-2000, he led the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee in raising a record-breaking $95 million for House of Representative races nationwide. On the Obama campaign, David Plouffe is credited with a brilliant and meticulously executed strategy that included using email and the web with unprecedented success. Colleagues say he is soft-spoken and unassuming, but tough, superbly organized, and capable of giving the kind of inspiring pep talk that, according to one staffer, makes you want to go run off a cliff with the guy. After winning the November election, Obama called Plouffe the unsung hero of this campaign, who built the best political campaign, I think, in the history of the United States of America. David's book about the 2008 election, The Audacity to Win, The Inside Story and Lessons of Barack Obama's Historic Victory, will be published in November. It should be fascinating reading. Please join me in welcoming the 2009 Convocation Speaker, David Plouffe.
Thank you all on such a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and may President Skorton thank you for that kind introduction. I've had a great morning with the four graduating seniors behind me, learning a lot about their lives and their classmates and their plans for the future. I also learned, though, that CJ had a little trouble with your introduction to wines class. He did not fare so well. So my only advice to you in the years and decades to come as you gather in restaurants around the country and the world with CJ, I would let him pick up the check, but not pick out the wine. It's a distinct honor to be with you here today at Cornell University, one of the true beacons of learning in all of America. For the 2009 graduating class of Cornell, this will be one of the more memorable weekends of your entire lives. Aside from the pride and the relief and the sense of accomplishment you feel, it will also be one of the last 2 days for a long time when you simply don't have anything hard to do. So really enjoy that. Congratulations to the faculty and administration of Cornell and the parents and families of all the graduates. You now send into our country and world young men and women you have helped mold. They are prepared now to play a large role in shaping the history for those generations from now who will be studying their accomplishments in these hallowed halls. And of course, shaping their own futures on roads they will travel more and more on their own. I am not a likely candidate to be speaking with you today. I am a state schooler who, as President Skorton mentioned, did not even graduate, supposing to give Ivy Leaguers, who have doubtless learned far more than I ever did at their age, wisdom and advice. Now, to the parents here today, no matter what path your child takes, you will not face the dilemma mine did. With one son in politics and one managing a used car dealership, it made the "how is Johnny doing" conversations pretty tough on them. It's a little bit better now, but still not great. But here I am. And truthfully, no commencement speaker, and certainly not me, can say much on this day that will be as memorable as being with your family and the excitement of what was just completed and what lies ahead. So I will speak simply and plainly about some life lessons I have absorbed that may ring true to you now or perhaps at a crossroads moment in the years and decades to come. I was just the campaign manager for what is widely considered the best-run presidential race in American political history. We made history. Thank you. Thank you. We made history and broke what many considered the most impenetrable barrier in our political and public life. That's pretty heady stuff. But as I evaluate my life now, and since I left college, the real scorecard that matters is not how many electoral votes we won or my other electoral triumphs. It is my relationship with my family and friends through those years, and how often, again and again, I chose to put my career first and my family second. When I was 24 years old, working on my first presidential race, I actually went a month without talking to my parents. I bounced between Iowa and New Hampshire, Maryland and Washington, loving the rush of competition and new experiences. They had no idea even where I was. Worse than not calling was that I didn't even think of it. And even the excuse of a world without many cell phones, and yes, graduates, that time did exist not too long ago, that does not make it much better. Campaign after campaign, the hours were long, the pressure intense, the free time non-existent, but the job and professional mission always came first. I was the phantom, doing important and increasingly remote things that were interesting to read about, but began to make me somewhat of a caricature, inaccessible and remote. Over the last 2 years, as I lived out the dream of every professional in my field, I could only do so becoming somewhat of a ghost of a father and a husband. And if our new daughter had not been born a few days late, I likely would have missed her birth, all best attentions aside. Now, the truth is, you must have passion for your work. You will spend the bulk of your time, from this point into retirement, which sadly may be 80 years old by the time you get there, working. The average person during a week spends at least 40 to 50 hours sleeping, if they were lucky, at least 50 hours working, 10 or 12 hours commuting and running errands to and from work, another few hours working from home, and maybe, if they were lucky, 50 or 20 hours a week with their kids, reading, watching TVs, going to a movie, maybe even drinking a beer. But many people spend more time than that working Monday through Friday, and many more in the world we live in will work either from the home Saturday or Sunday. I certainly did. That means two things in my view. First, you better really like what you do, or at least tolerate it, because you will spend most of your waking hours for the rest of your life not hanging out, playing beer pong, going to movies, or playing video games. You'll spend them working. And you better really treasure and get the most out of your non-working hours. I have come to believe that is one of life's central questions. How do you want to spend your 20, or if you are lucky, 30 hours a week when you are not working, sleeping, or otherwise doing things you must? Let that inform your hobbies, your relationships, and your passions. Because unless you are the son or daughter of great wealth, those are the increments of time that will define your life until your time is running out. I will confess, I have not properly figured it out. Now, granted, there were years, including the last two, where my actual free time amounted to 3 or 4 hours a week. Even Bernie Madoff would say that math does not work. But I know with whom and how I want to spend my time. I just have to work on the how and when. I do not believe it is an either-or proposition, and I don't want to excoriate myself too severely for the choices I have made. Many things worth doing professionally have to consume you. There are no shortcuts to success in these types of endeavors. My point is simple. As the years go by, those that help make you who you are may not always be the constant they have always been. New and exciting people and places will occupy your lives and your dreams. But it is the old standbys at 3 a.m. when you cannot sleep at the moment of your greatest triumphs and setbacks that will rush to the forefront. All I can recommend is that you try and maintain that balance and find it between professional achievement and drive and being rooted at home, between your incandescent future and your perhaps less romantic formative years. And as you begin to build new families, make sure you nourish them with the same care and concern that you do the lateral advancement, the acquirement of increased knowledge, and the pursuit of ambition. I often tell my wife when I'm on my deathbed, all that will really matter is my relationship and memories of my family, from my grandparents to my grandkids, if I'm so lucky. Yet time and again, that guiding North Star has been clouded over. That is not unusual. Heck, maybe today it's more the rule than the exception. We live in busy and complex times. but I implore you to try and determine how you will strike that right balance in your own lives. Because even those who set records, enjoy riches, and stretch themselves professionally are at their core sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, and fathers and mothers. That is what will and should define all of us. Now, this balance will be necessary to you because you are prepared to make enormous contributions to your profession, community, and world. You will be called. I saw the power of this in the last election when you and your generation elected a president and defied history. You are graduating from an Ivy League institution in the United States of America. It is truly like hitting the Powerball. You have been given a gift. And as you rightly choose a path of professional accomplishment and financial security for you and your family, I urge you to remember how incredibly fortunate you are. And in big ways and small, give some of your talent and bounty to the rest of humanity and your world. And you seem to be off to a very good start already in that regard. I was so deeply moved in this last election by those who supported my chosen candidate and those who supported our opponents, by the commitment, talent, and drive of your generation. And most of all, your global perspective and willingness, your desire to give outside of yourself. It made me incredibly confident in the future of our country and of our world, and also gave me a keen sense that your time should come soon, that you should not view the next 20 or 30 years as simply an apprenticeship. We now live in a time where you can lead, and you can lead right now, where the barriers to entrepreneurship and leadership are not age, race, or even education-based. A hunger, a commitment, and inspiration can be rewarded right away to satisfy both individual desires as well as our common good. And few generations in our country's history have been called like yours. The last century was widely viewed as the American century. Not yet 10 years into this 21st century, there is no guarantee it will be again. I am confident because of you that it can be. But every great society has to continually improve and renew. We know that in the decades to come, we need to lead the world in an energy revolution, continue to be the best place in the world for innovativeness and entrepreneurship, restore our moral leadership in the world, and make sure America remains a place where its sons and daughters can do even better than their mothers and fathers. The future will not be handed to you. In some ways, we are not even on the right trajectory. Sorry to say it, it is your responsibility starting today to fix that, to ensure our continued greatness. But rather than be cowed by this, and it's an awesome responsibility, you must embrace it. Greatness never comes from doing easy things well. It comes from tackling tough, even seemingly insurmountable obstacles, and against all odds in history, succeeding. But you will not be doing it alone. No longer does your educational pedigree guarantee you a certain status in society or a smooth path to country clubs and luxury cars. You have earned a leg up, no doubt. But it is a hungry world where community college, state college, and even non-college graduates can innovate, succeed, and move our country forward. Make sure that your greatest moments in life are not memorialized on this campus. They should be a foundation. But what you will build of your life over the next 50 or 60 years will be the parts visible to all, and most importantly, to yourselves. I was part of something last November that will ring throughout history, and I couldn't be prouder of it. One of the fundamental truths of what we accomplished, which will inform me and those who are part of it for the rest of our lives, is that we threw long. We refused to be defined by past history, what we were told we couldn't do, and saw things that simply did not exist to others. We saw what had never been, swung for the fences, and refused to accept the story that many thought would be written for us. We authored our own chapter in history, and what perhaps I will treasure most, and I hope you all have the experience once in your life, is to have the chance to be your best self, with a band of brothers and sisters who are also their best selves, and meet and seize your moment in time, so that you will feel that when it mattered most, you rose to heights you were not sure you could, and created your own canvas that will hold the color and patterns of the history you helped compose. That has nothing to do with politics. It simply has to do with the miracle of our country and our humanity, the ability to surprise, reinvent, and chart new and unexpected courses that alter human history. That is the one thing of which I am confident. Each of you have the ability to do that, and many of you will. And I cannot wait to witness your achievements, your selflessness, your leadership in the years to come. The future is yours to shape. Right now, we need you. So take the reins. It's all yours. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. Plouffe, for your insightful words. We're very appreciative that you took time out of your Memorial Day weekend to be with us. It is now my honor to present Mr. Plouffe with the Cornell Medallion. This award was created to recognize individuals for their meaningful contributions to our society. Mr. Plouffe, through your exemplary service, character, and leadership, we are pleased to present you with the 2009 Cornell Medallion. Thank you for making this convocation a memorable one. Thank you for making this convocation a memorable one for our graduates and our families. Thank you very much.
Can I move over to the sign a little bit? I will say what an honor, wonderful honor this is. And not to be too tough on CJ, I'm glad it's not a bottle of wine. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Great, thanks. Getting ripped apart today. Before we conclude this afternoon, I would like to thank the members of the Convocation Committee for helping to prepare this ceremony. I also want to thank those in the administration who helped to plan this event. Their enthusiastic service to Cornell and the class of 2009 is not only duly noted, but also enthusiastically appreciated. While this weekend is a celebration of our accomplishment as graduates, we would be remiss if we did not recognize those who have made such a profound impact on our lives, our families, our friends, and those who have been so important to us. Please join me in extending a very heartfelt appreciation to those who have guided us along the way. As we conclude, I'd like to share with you a portion of Constantine Cavafy's poem Ithaca, which is based on the Greek island and the namesake for the bustling town that we've called home for several years. Keep Ithaca always in your mind. Arriving there is what you're destined for. Ithaca gave you the marvelous journey. Without her, you wouldn't have set out. She has nothing left to give you now. And if you find her poor, Ithaca won't have fooled you. Wise as you will have become, so full of experience, you'll have understood by then what these Ithacas mean. I want to thank you all for attending today's senior convocation. I hope the rest of your commencement weekend is an enjoyable and memorable experience. I ask you to all please stand and join the Glee Club in chorus for the singing of our alma mater, which can be found in your program. Thank you very much.
Father.